The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Washington Post and the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And on today's Armchair Traveler, we're going to begin the journey with two wheels. And the headline says, "She always dreamed of riding a scooter around Bermuda, then she tried it." This article, written by Elizabeth Chang, it appeared in the January 3rd, 2020 issue of the Washington Post. Let's go right along with Ms. Chang. Every paradise on earth has a dirty little secret. Mosquitoes, perhaps, or overcrowding, or jellyfish. Even the Garden of Eden had a snake. On a recent trip to Bermuda, a tiny territory rich in natural beauty, historic locales, and multi-hued charm, my husband and I ran smack into a hidden flaw. Its roads are unsettlingly dangerous. According to a 2011 government health report, Bermuda's traffic fatality rate was 28 per 100,000. The U.S. rate, 10. Though often referred to as an island, fishhook-shaped Bermuda is actually an archipelago of 138 islands measuring about 22 miles long and 1 mile wide. The eight largest islands are connected by bridges and a causeway. There are three main roads, all of which, we would learn, are narrow, winding, and invariably shoulderless, if not rimmed with vegetation or walls. That, along with speeding and drinking, is the reason that in 2014, Bermuda had one of the highest traffic mortality rates among the 42 countries and partner nations in the Organization for Economic Development and Cooperation. In 2018, 1,740 people were transported to the hospital with road injuries, according to the Bermuda Hospitals Board. There were 12 deaths. Newly instituted sobriety stops helped reduce the number of traffic deaths in Bermuda to 7 in 2019, though the number of hospital visits through October, the latest month available, and that was 2019, was slightly up over the previous year. Of course, tourists can hardly avoid the roads. Most visitors arrive by cruise ship, as we did, and most cruise ships tie up at the Royal Naval Dockyard, a historical site and tourist attraction at the western tip of the island, far from the best beaches in any town. Because there is already too much traffic on the island, there are no rental cars. Even households are limited to one automobile apiece, which means there are many motorcycles zooming around. To get anywhere, tourists must rely on scooters, public transit, buses and ferries, pricey taxis, or the most recent option, electric cars. We would wind up testing all of these alternatives in a visit that revolved around transportation much more than we had expected. Now, the next section is headlined, "The Scooter Chronicles." For decades, I'd had the idyllic dream that if we ever got to Bermuda, we'd tour by scooter, breezing past pastel cottages to iconic pink sand beaches, wind whipping our hair, stopping for anything interesting we saw along the way. But then I read a strong warning about scooters in our guidebook, which noted that on average there is one death every month on Bermuda's roads. And at a cruise ship presentation about Bermuda, the speaker, who had been delightfully frank about the island's shortcomings, "The food is too expensive, the souvenirs are made elsewhere," and refused to even discuss scooters at all. "I'm not going to get into that," he said. Still, dreams die hard. Daryl, my husband, had owned a motorcycle in his admittedly long-ago youth, and some fellow middle-aged cruise passengers had rented scooters before and were planning to do so again. So after docking in early September, we examined a two-seat vehicle, took a few turns around the practice track, and set off for Gibbs Hill Lighthouse, about 8.5 miles away. The rental from Oleander Cycles was $65 for 24 hours, plus a one-time $30 repair waiver. Rather than blowing in the breeze, our hair was covered by mandatory helmets, which I soon realized were about the only concession to scooter safety on the island. Much as I wanted to gaze at the colorful homes and the sparkling water I could glimpse through the trees, ooh, there's a little beach, I was loath to turn my head. The two-lane road was tight and curvy. The oncoming traffic seemed so frighteningly close, and I could feel the vehicles behind us breathing down our necks, like lions toying with their prey. The 35-kilometer speed limit, or 35 kilometers per hour speed limit, apparently was an inside joke. It's actually closer to 80 kilometers per hour. That's about 50 miles per hour in practice. And for some reason, every driver was honking at us, and I haven't even mentioned that we had to drive on the wrong side of the road. Looking over Darrell's shoulder, I kept a weather eye on the yellow line, occasionally shouting, "Left, left, left!" And then it began to rain. We missed the 117-foot-tall lighthouse entirely on the first pass. Gibbs Hill, built in 1844 by convicts overseen by the British Royal Engineers, is the oldest cast-iron lighthouse in the world and boasts a huge Fresnel lens with a 1,000-watt bulb. The light can be seen 40 miles away by sea. Once our legs stopped shaking, we climbed the 185 steps to the top and appreciatively took in the view. Lush greenery, white roofs, topping homes painted in bright jelly bean hues, and a sea that displayed so many shades of blue, inky blue, deep blue, aqua blue. I ran out of adjectives. Far off in the misty distance, we could see our docked ship. The ride back was less eventful. The rain-slicked roads had dried, but the traffic was just as unnerving, and our backs were beginning to ache. It wasn't relaxing, especially for Darrell, and it certainly didn't seem safe. We took a farewell photo with the scooter, broke out the bus and ferry schedules, and tried to recalibrate our romantic expectations, a bit embarrassed and bewildered that the other middle-aged scooter riders were willing to go out again. When I checked the State Department's database of U.S. citizen deaths overseas on our return, I found that 13 Americans had died in motorcycle accidents in Bermuda between January of 2003 and June of 2019. Resorting to buses and taxis. The next day, rather than zipping off to famed Horseshoe Bay Beach on a scooter, we trundled up to it in a standing-room-only bus. Air conditioned, Darrell said as we boarded. This is the way to go, and if you don't mind some extra walking, adhering to a schedule, and making lots of stops, it is. Bermuda's buses, $5 a ride, unless you buy a pass, are affordable and run every half hour or so. During the roughly 35-minute trip, we chatted with our fellow passengers, including a Harley owner from Texas, who insisted he'd never ride a scooter in Bermuda because it's so dangerous. This cheered Darrell even more. Horseshoe Bay Beach is inarguably stunning, with aqua waters advancing and retreating on an arc of sugar-soft, blush-colored, and bookended by rocky cliffs. The sand gets its unusual pigmentation from a tiny cell organisms that grow on the undersides of nearby coral ledges. When the foraminifera die, their red shells wash into the shore, and a mix with the white sand giving it a pink tinge. While we don't, or rather didn't, consider the sand especially pink, it was the softest and finest we'd ever felt. We staked out some empty beachfront away from the sizable crowd and swam a little, but we were mostly content to gaze, mesmerized, at the crystalline waves framed by limestone bluffs. It was only toward the end of our visit that we got curious about the visitors who kept disappearing behind the cliffs at the edge of the beach. Following them, we found a series of charming, rock-sheltered coves. In the first one, which I later learned is called Baby Beach for its gentle waves, we saw, appropriately, a Bermuda longtail nesting in the hollow of a rock, looking serenely back at us with bright, satisfied eyes. I could have stayed there all day, like that bird. But there were other beaches to check out. We took a taxi from Horseshoe to Elbow Beach, 3.5 miles, 10 minutes, $15 with tip. Regaling our friendly cabbie with our scooter horror story, he insisted that the drivers hadn't been honking at us, but had been tooting hello to people they knew. Turns out the Bermudians used their horns with the friendly abandon of a politician waving from a parade float. Elbow Beach, a long expanse of pink sand facing still more cerulean waters, was much less crowded than Horseshoe Bay, but not as picturesque. It's the bridesmaid to Horseshoe's bride. After a short sojourn, we climbed back up the road and waited in the sun for another bus. being ferried around. Ferries, high-speed, tourist-crammed catamarans with indoor and rooftop seating, are the fastest way to get to the capital of Hamilton or the historic town of St. George's from the dockyard. The trips take about 20 and 40 minutes, respectively. Taxi rides would be twice as long, buses even longer. The fare is the same as for the bus system and much cheaper than going by taxi, which would be approximately $50 one way to Hamilton and $75 one way to St. George's. We were grateful, therefore, that we could hop a ferry to Hamilton for the last harbor night of the summer. The main street of the city, which is a kaleidoscopic jumble of vibrantly painted homes and buildings, was closed to traffic to accommodate food and craft stands. But the highlight to us was the thrilling performance of the Gambe dancers, who donned riotously colorful, elaborately tasseled costumes, painted masks and tall, feathered headdresses, and act out stories to the insistent beat of a bass and snare drum, punctuated by shrill whistles. The folk tradition, which borrows from African, Native American, Caribbean, and British cultures, dates to the 18th century, before slavery was outlawed in Bermuda, and requires both artistry and athleticism. We were also delighted to find a stand selling masaladas, Portuguese donuts, which are a beloved treat in Darrell's home state of Hawaii, too. The next day, we boarded another ferry to St. George's, which is at the opposite end of the island from the dockyard. Bermuda's first settlement, established by the English in 1612, has narrow cobblestone streets bearing whimsical names, Featherbed Alley, Aunt Peggy's Lane, and staid British colonial-style stone buildings, many enlivened by island colors. We took a walking tour and visited the Bermudian Heritage Museum, where we chatted with its charming docent and the perfumery, perfume being one of the few truly made in Bermuda souvenirs. Then we made the 1.5-mile round-trip trudge to Tobacco Beach, or Tobacco Bay Beach, a clear turquoise lagoon protected by a ring of limestone rock formations, with a tiny, packed pink sand beach overlooked by a music-blasting bar concession stand. We were too hot and too tired to deal with the crowds, noise, and the party vibe, and we were ready to head back long before the ferry was scheduled to return. An electric option. On our final day on the island, we still hadn't tasted one of its famous fish sandwiches or made it to several sites on our Bermuda bucket list, and our ship was leaving at 3 p.m., so we rented an electric car. The Renault Twizy, which have been on Bermuda's roads since 2017, are open-air vehicles a bit reminiscent of Little Tyke's Cozy Coupes. Current vehicles rents the Twizy for about $100 a day, plus a one-time $30 insurance charge. A couple of other agencies offer slightly larger, more expensive electric vehicles with side-by-side seating. Though they drive like golf carts and aren't especially powerful, the Twizy's car-like controls and four wheels make them much safer to operate. Since operations commenced, we've had a handful of minor collisions from which there have been no significant injuries, said Somar's Car, who manages the Hamilton location of current vehicles. The biggest drawback is the narrow tandem seating, which can be excruciating for a tall or older back passenger. Tootling around, in the embarrassingly cute little car, though, was both relaxing and fun. We found the appropriately named Sea Glass Beach tucked behind some derelict apartment buildings and beheld layers upon layers of sea glass that tinkled like wind chimes as the waves washed in and out. From there, we drove to next-door Black Bay Beach, a trio of small tide-dependent coves for a bit more ocean-gazing. Our final stop was at Woody's, a local dive bar that sits across from the picturesque Boaz Island Bay, so we could finally try a fried fish sandwich, wahoo with all the fixings, cheese, coleslaw, tartar sauce, and hot sauce, on raisin bread. It was so huge we split it, eating on the porch of the bright blue bungalow with a pleasant mixture of tourists and locals and small hungry birds enjoying the food and the people watching. At last we were experiencing Bermuda the way I had imagined, but it was time to leave. As we reluctantly rose from the table, we had a game plan for if we ever return. Arrive by air, stay longer, book accommodations in a more central location, and feel no regret about putting around, in a goofy electric car rather than zipping along atop a red scooter. because while we were out and about chatting with people that last day, we learned the details of a fatal crash the previous afternoon. It involved a 49-year-old American woman from another cruise ship who was operating a scooter. We would later read that she was an experienced motorcyclist, but on Bermuda's roads, that wasn't enough. Well, as we step through the early weeks of fall, some of you may be making plans for holiday travel. Writer Christopher Elliott asked, will Thanksgiving be as bad as summer travel? His perspective article appeared in the September 15, 2022 issue of the Washington Post. And let's see what Christopher has to tell us. When Denis Shershikov thinks about Thanksgiving travel, he has flashbacks to this summer. He relives the endless airline delays, the cancellations, and the high prices, and he wonders whether the upcoming holiday travel period could be worse than the nightmares of July and August. Remember this summer? Gas prices soared, airlines canceled just over 2% of all domestic flights. It was enough to make anyone stop traveling for good. Shershikov flew his family from New York to Albuquerque this spring, and he says it was a hassle and was overpriced. So for Thanksgiving, he's driving from New York to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, to visit relatives. With three kids younger than five, he'll be making frequent stops, staying in hotels. Flights were out of the question, says Shershikov, who runs a real estate investment firm in New York City. Gas prices are definitely a concern. We're a bit worried about any looming health issues, and would gladly forfeit the money we have already spent on the trip if it meant keeping everyone healthier. Many travelers have already started to wonder whether this fall will be a repeat of summer, with higher fares and numerous cancellations. And what about gas prices, which peaked around the height of the summer travel season? Travel insurance expert Chirant Nekaros predicts that the number of travelers will return to 2019 levels this Thanksgiving. But Nekaros, president and CEO of the International Services and founder of Visitor Guard, says it will be anything but business as usual, with airlines continuing to experience staff shortages and other operational problems. He expects more flight cancellations than last Thanksgiving. COVID will also play a big role this Thanksgiving and cause medical uncertainty for many travelers, Nekaros says. That said, fall travel won't be an unwanted summer travel sequel, according to Michael Taylor, Managing Director for Travel, Hospitality, and Retail at J.D. Power, a marketing research firm. It will be more of a spinoff. This past summer was characterized by sustained demand that didn't seem to be blunted by increased ticket, room, or car rental charges, he says. Thanksgiving travel is very date-specific, and airlines will better understand what the current system can handle versus what happened this past summer. Experts predict that gas prices will hold steady. The U.S. Energy Information Administration forecast retail gasoline prices will average $3.60 per gallon in the fourth quarter and $3.61 per gallon in 2023. But airfares will remain high. The airfare app Hopper sees the average domestic round-trip airfare hitting $373 in November, up 24% from 2019. That's the last year before the pandemic. You may find some lower fares if you book earlier in the fall, but prices rising fast from the average of $286 in August. Hotel rates will also remain stubbornly high. Hopper says average room rates this fall, $217 per night, are 28% higher than in 2019. This isn't the year to wait for a last-minute deal, says Christina Tenna, general manager for the Americas for Travel Insurance Company World Nomads. Don't try to outsmart the market, she says. The cheapest time to book is always in the past. So in terms of pricing, it'll almost be as challenging as the summer, excluding gas prices, but it depends on where you want to go. The cost of air and lodging will be at the summer levels for the most popular destinations, such as Mexico and the Caribbean, says Peter Velitis, executive vice president for partner relations at Internova Travel Group. But Europe will cost considerably less than it did last summer because of lower demand. It's not going to be just another Thanksgiving. Even the last normal Thanksgiving in 2019 was different, says Matthew Colbert, founder of the Empire Aviation Services. Back then, planes were full, but flights were plentiful. He cautions that if you treat this holiday like previous Thanksgivings, you'll be in trouble. It's a short, intense holiday and travel period, and any hiccup can cause a big headache. Travelers need to have extra time on either end of the road trip, or the trip, to get where they're going and back again. Baruch Silverman, CEO of the Smart Investor, says travelers overpaid for the airline tickets this summer. And worse, they were on uncomfortably crowded flights. But there are always ways to make Thanksgiving travel less frenetic and less expensive. If you can travel before the holiday rush or plan to return the following Tuesday or Wednesday, you can reduce the risk of packed flights where you could easily get bumped, he says. Research by the online travel agency CheapAir suggests that you should avoid the Saturday and Sunday before Thanksgiving, that would be November 19th and 20th, and Saturday and Sunday after the holiday, which would be November 26th and 27th. The least expensive days to fly are Thanksgiving and Black Friday. How do you clear those Thanksgiving travel hurdles? Well, if you're flying, you could do what travel, researchers are suggesting, and that's hire an airplane greeter, or airport greeter, I should say, to whisk you through the chaos. An airport concierge can find a faster way through security or a shortcut to your gate or airline club. The services started about $100 per person with cancellations, lost luggage, and overall confusion. It is worth the cost to have on-the-ground support to help smooth out any potential concerns, especially internationally, says Steinberg, who works for Ovation Networks. Maybe you can't escape the high prices or the cancellations this Thanksgiving, but you can get away from the crowds. Consider America's perennial favorite Thanksgiving destination for the past 6 years running, according to a survey, Alliance Partners USA. Since the survey's inception in 2016, Alliance has found that the number of U.S. city Americans head for Thanksgiving festivities, the number one city, New York City, says Daniel DeRazzo, an Alliance spokesman. Maybe Shereshkov is making a smart move by taking advantage of lower gas prices and leaving the Manhattan crowds behind. So something to think about as you plan for the holiday travel. And no doubt any traveler would like to cut travel costs. All of us probably share that thought. Writer Donald Wood of Travel Pulse offers tips to travel more without spending more. Now, this is a Q&A article. It appeared in the September 25th, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer, and it's quite interesting. With rising inflation rates and less disposable income, travelers are looking for every way imaginable to stretch their dollars and travel on a budget. Sometimes credit card rewards and airline miles can turn a standard trip into a dream adventure. Acclaimed financial optimizer and host of the podcast All the Hacks, Chris Hutchins, sat down with Travel Pulse to talk about using credit card points for travel, the best airline miles programs, cheap flight search techniques, and a lot more. First question, as the man with 10 million airline miles, how do you accumulate credit card points and use them to travel for free? Answer, it really comes down to two main things. First, I take a look at how I'm spending my money and make sure that I always have a card that offers bonus points on the areas where I spend the most. Since I know I spend a lot on travel, dining, and groceries, I have a Chase Sapphire Reserve to earn 3 times on travel and an Amex Gold to earn 4 times on dining and groceries. The other big way to earn points is taking advantage of a big sign-up bonuses for opening new cards whenever they happen. I don't take it to the extreme of opening up dozens of cards a year, but when I see an amazing bonus valued at over $1,000 in points, I usually take advantage of it. I recently published episode 65 of my podcast and shared a card that increased their sign-up bonus to something worth almost $1,500 in points. Beyond that, there are a ton of little hacks I like to use to earn more points. For example, I don't have a card that offers bonus points on home improvement stores, but I was able to buy a Home Depot gift card at the grocery store using a card that earns 4 times points on groceries. And for how to use them to travel for free, if the points are with a specific airline or hotel group, I just book directly through their websites. But if I'm earning points in a flexible program like Chase's Ultimate Rewards or Amex's Membership Rewards, I like to use those points to transfer to their airline partners and book through those partners' mileage programs. The next question, with record-setting inflation and travel price gouging, what are some tips for flying in first class without opening your wallet? Well, the answer, the secret to know when it comes to flying in first class is that it, despite it's usually costing as much as 5 to 10 times the price of an economy ticket to fly in first class, it usually only requires 2 times as many miles to book a first class ticket. So when I'm taking a big trip and want to relax on the amazing lie-flat beds that most airlines offer in business first class, I'm always using my miles to book those seats for free. While you didn't mention specifically hotels, I will share an upgrade trick that's worked for me and hundreds of my listeners. You want to book directly with the hotel you're staying at and email them after you book to let them know you booked a room with them, when you're coming, that you're excited about staying with them, and anything else you might be celebrating. You should follow up again in about 2 to 3 days before the arrival just to confirm you're still coming. I've seen listeners get everything from free upgrades to bottles of wine, and one listener and her husband even arrived to see their initials embroidered on their pillows. Definitely try that out. Next question. Airline prices have increased by as much as 40% in recent months. What are the best miles programs and credit cards to save money and stretch your dollar? The answer? With all the fluctuations in airline prices, I try to accumulate as many of my points and miles as possible into flexible point programs that let you transfer points to different airlines and hotel groups. The way you get the most flexibility aren't stuck with one airline that might have crazy prices right now, or rather that way you should do. And some of these include Chase Ultimate Rewards, American Express Membership Rewards, Citi Thank You Points, Capital One Miles, and Bilt Rewards, also Marriott Bonvoy, where you can actually transfer Bonvoy points to many airlines. Next question. As the host of the All the Hacks podcast, how do you get the best deals with clever searching for flights? Well, my answer, a favorite tool when it comes to saving in airfare is Google Flights. You can search with a destination in mind to find the cheapest places to fly and even do those searches with filters on like nonstop or under $700, as example. You can also search multiple to-from airports at once to find out if you might save a lot by driving a little more. Finally, you can browse the calendar view by clicking on the date field to quickly see how much it would cost to fly on any date. The only thing to remember is that Southwest doesn't show up on the Google Flights or most other flight search sites, so you'll want to check their site separately if they fly to wherever you're going. Another great trick worth sharing is the one that Scott Keyes from Scott's Cheap Flight shared. He calls it the Greek Island trick, and it works by pairing a great deal on a long-haul international flight to the continent region you want to visit with a cheap regional flight or even a train or bus ride to get you to your final destination. For example, if you were trying to fly to a Greek island from San Francisco, despite there being many airlines that fly to each destination individually, only a couple of airlines fly between both. So, if you search for the whole route, you only get a few options. But if you search from San Francisco to Athens, there will be so many more airlines that show up, and you can buy a cheap flight or ferry to get from Athens to the island. So what are some of your secrets to getting the most value out of airlines? Well, the biggest secret is getting value out of your points and miles to have some flexibility. So there you go. And that, my friend, is going to bring us to the end of today's Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed the journey and that you'll join us again next week. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you that the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That website, again, is ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, you may call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.